I would like to offer this morning these pastoral words. They are from Wendy Naku from the Zen Center of Los Angeles. And she wrote these words for her Sangha this last week. And they spoke directly to my heart. This is a time you must know what you stand for. This is the time to let go and allow Zazen to steady and sustain you. This is a time when you vow to listen. Listen deeply to the cries of the world and shed your own tears. This is a time to not just hear echoes of your own ideas, but to learn from someone who is not like you. This is a time when the bubbles are bursting and determination is raised. This is a time to be fierce in the Dharma values of unity, inclusion, respect for diversity, and doing beneficial acts for all. Actually, the Zen Center's vision says it all. Let us create an enlightened world free of suffering, in which all beings live in harmony. Everyone has enough. Deep wisdom is realized, and compassion flows unhindered. Whether you are grieving or rejoicing this morning, please offer up your own sentiment to each other. We will have a moment of silence. This after the service, we offer you all an opportunity to share your pains and your hopes with the members of this congregation. There will be a sharing wall in the back of the fellowship hall, and you will all be invited to write and share your feelings. Our reading this morning is by Sam Boswell. He was reviewing the book, The Reunited States of America, by Mark Gerzon. Only 3 out of 10 Americans actually feel represented in Washington. Fortunately, from the very roots of our culture, a new narrative, a new story, is emerging that appeals particularly to the other 7 out of 10. The story says Americans can work together with people different from ourselves to find common ground and strengthen the country we all love. That story does not mean agreeing on everything, nor does it mean being nice or moderate or splitting the difference. On the contrary, it may mean fighting for what one believes in, but respecting one's adversary for doing the same. It means knowing the difference between an issue you are willing to listen and learn and one where you believe you are not. Above all, it means disagreeing strongly without ever forgetting that they probably love America as much as we do. It has been a shocking and challenging week for all of us. Stunned, hit by a truck, afraid, angry, devastated, sick, achy, reeling, shocking, nausea, wanting to curl up in a corner, unable to sleep, disassociative. People have used all these terms to describe their feelings since last Tuesday night. If any of you are like me, it came as a total surprise. On Wednesday, I woke still shocked with one thought. This changes everything. I knew without a doubt that the way I lived and my priorities needed to change. I had not understood many things about America. There was pain I didn't know the depths of, and there was hatred that was more intense than I had ever imagined. I also knew I understood nothing. I did not understand how so many people voted for Donald Trump. I did not understand how they can endorse at worst and overlook at best his blatant white supremacy and the way he stirred up hate towards people of color, immigrants, and Muslims. I did not understand how people could vote for a man who brags about sexually assaulting women. I didn't understand how intelligent people could vote for a person who doesn't believe in climate change, a crisis that will probably become so severe to cause overwhelming suffering and destruction. I couldn't understand how anyone would want a president who believes that taxing corporations and the rich less and giving them more power could help solve any of our problems. And I couldn't understand how Americans could on purpose empower bullying, racists, and misogynists. Leonard Cohen, who we also mourned this week, once said in an interview, "Most of us from the middle class, we have a kind of old 19th century idea of what democracy is. More or less, to oversimplify it, that the masses are going to love Shakespeare and Beethoven. That's more or less our idea of what democracy is. But that ain't it. It's going to come up in some unexpected ways, from the stuff that we think is junk, the people we think are junk, the ideas we think are junk, the television we think is junk. So this is democracy, and it is coming up in unexpected ways." And I had to understand the junk. So I began to read, and things began to shift for me. The shift began, oddly enough, with a Trump anti-Semitic ad. I'd read about the ad in an article, An American Tragedy, in a New Yorker article that detailed in painful and vivid language the danger of a Trump presidency. In it, the author mentioned Trump's final campaign ad, which he claimed was anti-Semitic. I had not seen a single campaign ad all season. I don't know how that happened, but so I decided to watch it. Embarrassingly, I couldn't figure out the anti-Semitic part, so I had to read the analysis to understand. But I can assure you, it really was very anti-Semitic, and intentionally so. You just had to know things I didn't know. Like, for example, that it was modeled on an early anti-Jewish ad from Hitler's Germany, or that all the bad elites that were in the pictures and flashed across the screen were all Jewish, except for Hillary Clinton. But more shocking for me in that ad than that hidden in plain sight hate had been knowing, because I've been knowing about the hate, was how much I liked the ad before I knew, and how convincing I found it. Donald Trump narrated in this very calm, assured, authoritative voice that I didn't even know he had. He talked about the powers in Washington, didn't work for the average person, only the elites. The word spoke perfectly to all the Americans who the current economy has left behind. Pictures of people of different ages, classes, races flashed across the screen. Trump told America he would make their lives better. When it was over, I realized that if this ad was the only thing I knew about Donald Trump, I would have voted for him. I wanted what he wanted, a United States that worked for ordinary people and not just people at the top. The ad shook apart my after-election lumping of Trump supporters, where I lumped Trump supporters into this cohesive group that simply stood for hate. And I began to read what Trump voters said and why they voted for Trump. It turns out that lots and lots and lots of people who voted for Trump don't like him at all. Many are worried that their gamble, that he will stand up for their values and make their lives better, are worried that it won't work out, that it will end in a disaster. So why did they vote for him? Many, many just wanted an assurance of a conservative Supreme Court. Others simply could not stand Clinton. For many people in this country, Clinton is as bad or worse than most liberals find Trump. So their vote for Trump was really a vote against Clinton. And others were simply angry. They voted for Trump because they were desperate for a change in their economic situation, Manufacturing jobs disappeared after Bill Clinton signed NAFTA in the 1990s, and neither a Bush or Obama helped them with their difficult new lives or tried to make it better. Instead of ignoring them, Trump listened to them. He promised to end the trade deals that had moved jobs to other countries and promised to bring back desperately needed living wage jobs. Many even acknowledged that he might not be able to bring back living wage jobs, but at least he noticed and addressed their pain. At least he didn't tell them the economy was fine and to stop whining. The stock market's up. Unemployment is down. And if they wanted better jobs, they should just take tens of thousands of loans out to go to college. I heard part of an interview on OPB with a mayor from a steel town in Pennsylvania. If ISIS came through this region, he laughed, they would just keep on going. It's that destroyed. The mayor said that when he started at the steel mill, it had offered 8,000 jobs. But now with technology, the company could make the same amount of steel with 400 people. And there wasn't good work anywhere to be found. The reporter reminded the mayor that in an earlier interview, the mayor had acknowledged that Trump could not bring back the steel mills. Yes, that's true, said the mayor. Then why did you vote for him? Asked the reporter. He gave us hope, he said. Hope. Trump gave a lot of people hope. It is a very simple. Hope matters. When life is hard or empty or painful and one is poor or lonely or afraid, the best elixir there is hope. Hope gets you up in the morning, keeps you moving during the day, and lets you sleep at night. A person will vote for hope. It turns out that a person will throw the worth and dignity of their fellow Americans under the bus for hope. One should not underestimate its power. Hope really matters. Barack Obama gave voters hope. Bernie Sanders gave people hope. Hillary Clinton never offered much hope. If we voted for her, we understood she would be a good president, hardworking, offering the same centrist positions as Barack Obama. But Clinton never said how she would change the U.S. in ways that made people's lives significantly better, or would stop their suffering, or their pain, or their loneliness. She never offered to make America great for the first time or any time. She just said it was great already, which wasn't very empathetic for those for whom it simply hasn't been great. The U.S. would be better for everyone, she told us, but in small, pragmatic ways. So it is now, 5 days after the election, and half the country is feeling hopeful that President Trump will make their lives better, or at least promote the values they most care about. And the other half is full of despair, outraged, looking anywhere and everywhere for hope. They want hope that somehow marginalized people will not be bullied, assaulted, deported, watched, or tracked, and that climate change and the environment will be taken seriously, that the shredded safety net will not completely vanish, and people will still have access to health care. Beginning Tuesday night, thousands and thousands of people have marched in the streets every single day. Their purpose? To say no to Trump's hateful vision of a good United States. And to say we love you. We love you. To those Trump has maligned publicly. Others have started a safety pin campaign. This tells people of color, LGBTQ people, Muslims, and others that a person wearing a safety pin is a safe person that they can turn to if things get difficult or dangerous. And you will notice I am wearing a safety pin. And you, too, can all have a safety pin after the service in the fellowship hall. People are also writing, talking, making videos, creating art, developing rituals, trying to find traction in this scary, messed up moment where all they have held sacred and important seems ready to disappear. One of the fundamental purposes of faith traditions is to offer hope. Religions provide worldviews that tell those that follow them where the power is, what saves us when we cannot save ourselves, where the good comes from and evil, what to hold on to when life falls apart, and where to find hope. This direction helps people know what to do when the crisis hits. Unitarian Universalism is, many say, an adolescent faith, full of energy and good ideas, but clearer about what it is not than what it is. Rarely do we tell anyone how our faith will change their lives and make the world better. People must discover how their faith might sustain them on their own. To be broadly meaningful in this moment, we must transform so we are ready to articulate clearly how our faith offers hope. Crisis creates, if handled well, the perfect medium for transformation. Crisis is a moment when you realize that your very way of being in the world has not prepared you for this moment, and you have to become a different person in order to survive and to flourish. The election of Donald Trump is one such moment for many of us, and for Unitarian Universalism. The question is before us. Will we be the people we've been waiting for? Will we be the people we say we most want to be? A compassionate people, ready to alleviate suffering and create justice? A people so grounded in the miracle of life that we live our days with gratitude, prepared for joy? Will we allow ourselves a shared vision that offers hope? A vision that reminds us we do not need to think alike to love alike, and that the universe is bountiful and creative, and so are we. A vision that upholds the worth and dignity of each and every person and the importance of the interdependent web of all existence, and that honors each and every person's direct experience as an authoritative source of life and faith. A vision that reminds us to appreciate awe and wonder, to open our minds and hearts to all the wisdom human beings have created and shared for thousands and thousands of years. A vision that there is not only one way, but many ways to be just and fair and compassionate. Unitarian Universalists are a curious people, a wondering people, a people willing to sit on the cusp of the unknown and discover what is there. Revelation is always open. What we believe and value is enough. It is enough to bring goodness to each of our individual lives and to the world. I have thought a few times over the last week that maybe the election of Donald Trump is better for the quest of beloved community than the election of Hillary Clinton might have been. If she won, those who believe above all in the inherent worth and dignity of each person would have felt we won enough to continue to be as we had been before. We could have ignored, if we chose, the festering rage and pain that divides us as Americans, that keeps the white working class, people of color, evangelicals, and progressive white liberals all in different worlds, with different values and perspectives, but still trying to share the same spaces and places. Now, at this moment, this week, we can hear each other's voices. And it is exceptionally painful to hear them. But we cannot ignore them. Leonard Cohen said in the same interview quoted earlier that this America is really where the experiment is unfolding. This is really where the races confront one another, where the classes, where the genders, where even the sexual orientations confront one another. This is the real laboratory of democracy. We are in the real laboratory of democracy right now in this moment. And we must ask ourselves, how do we make this work? I heard an interview with a white supremacist this week. He shared that he believes as he does because he doesn't think mixing people of different cultures, ethnicities, and values can work, and simply leads to unresolved and painful conflict. Only if our country is 80% white and Christian, he believes, will we have peace. Unitarian Universalists believe the opposite. We do not believe that you need to think alike to love alike. That's our message, our vision to the world, and it matters right now. We have been living this experiment for decades, and now we must show people that it works. So where is the hope, like today? What do we do right now? Cohen tells us in the chorus to his song Anthem, "Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." There is a crack in everything, he says, and that's how the light gets in. Living our UU faith full out, let's the light shine in. This means that when people are dehumanized in any way, the Unitarian Universalists stand up and say no, clearly, firmly, persistently, with courage and with kindness. This means when the interconnected web is threatened, we stand up and we say no, clearly, firmly, persistently, with courage and with kindness. We do this in our personal relationships and together in the public world. But we are not a social justice organization. We are much more. We are a faith tradition. We offer a vision for a world where people don't have to think alike to love alike. We offer a vision of the world where every person matters and where we care for the earth. We offer a vision that says there are endless creative possibilities of how to be in this world. Inside these walls, we learn the ways so that we learn the ways to be so that we can make the world more compassionate and loving. Ring the bells that still can ring, says Cohen. And so what are those bells he refers to for us as you use in this moment? Gratitude is one. What are you grateful for? What is it you live for? Why does life matter? Relationships that nurture and sustain you is another bell. Nurture them. Hold them. Let them sustain you in the worst of times. Spiritual practices are a bell we ring. They keep us present in the world. They teach us patience and give us the skills to take a moment, to just take a moment before reacting to whatever thing happens in the world. And we always have the bell to be compassionate to ourselves. We are all good people. We are fallible people. We must be kind and forgiving to ourselves. Forget your perfect offering, says Cohen. Forget your perfect offering. And what does that mean? It means when we go into the world and this moment, we are not going to be perfect. We probably don't even know what to do. It means we will make mistakes. We will mess up. And that's okay. No one asked us to be perfect. They asked us to show up. We have to act. We have to make offerings, even if they are imperfect. We need to listen to those so different from ourselves. We must be compassionate And remember that all beings suffer and all beings want to be happy. We can pay attention and notice when we must stand up and say no. That is unacceptable. We do not want to sit blindly in our houses reading academic treatises on what is happening in the world. We need to notice and act. There is a crack in everything, says Cohen. And that means us. That means each of us. It means all the people in this country. It means our economic system. It means our democracy. It means we must be humble. There is a crack in everything. And that's how the light gets in, says Cohen. Our hearts broke and cracked on Tuesday. The country we love is cracked and in pain. So let us bring our light, our vision, our love, our action. Let us stand by those cracks with courage and with kindness and glow brightly, bringing the promise and hope of Unitarian Universalism, the hope and the promise that we don't need to think alike to love alike. We can uphold the worth and dignity of all people, and we can care for this earth, and that the creative universe offers endless possibilities of what is possible. And we'll stand there, glowing bright at the cracks, until there is more love somewhere. And that is our hope.
Thank you very much, Tracy. This isn't really a question, but this is just a brief reflection. I saw in the New York Times an ad by the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, a letter to Mr. Trump saying, in your campaign, you promised mass deportations, entry bans on Muslims, restrictions on women's right to abortion, reauthorization of waterboarding and other torture, and change of libel laws to restrict freedom of expression. The ACLU promised that it would fight using the 1st, 4th, 5th, 8th, and 14th Amendments to defend the freedoms and liberties that we have. My reflection is that my mother, who died 5 years ago at the age of 90, I had all her mail forwarded to me, and I kept getting copies of the Constitution from the ACLU. She was a member, as were all her friends. And I thought, you know, that's nice. I'm not going to join the ACLU. Well, she grew up, or she lived in difficult times. She was a young mother during the McCarthy era. And what goes around comes around, and I'm going to join the ACLU.
And that reminds me of the other great hope. So many people are standing up and saying no right now all over this country. So many organizations, so many people marching in the streets, thousands and thousands of people. People don't want Donald Trump's vision of America.
Hi, I'm just wondering if there's been any talk of any new groups forming here to specifically address issues related to this new president.
No, there hasn't yet, but we haven't had a lot of time to do that. So that seems really like a strong possibility. I personally feel like I want people in this congregation and other places to learn the skills that we need to be able to stand up and say no with kindness and courage. I don't think that's the easiest thing to do, especially when it's in a face-to-face conversation. But people know those skills, and they can teach them to us. So that's one thing that I for sure want to do, but I think being together to try to figure out other stuff to do is really important.
Thank you so much, Tracy.